Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Carlo Barone of WCBI Sports. Now, get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
It's Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Carlo Barone here with you on a Thursday morning. Thursday. I had to think about it for a second. Sometimes that happens.
The rope hat is distracting you. Warrants, especially for Brian.
We need to get some Thunder and Lightning rope hats is what I'm learning.
You're not going to go where? It's going to sit on your desk and do nothing.
I'm just saying for you.
Why are we getting hats? We need a hat.
Well, we get them for our listeners. We can give them away. We can do a giveaway. Well, yeah, TNL.
Everyone under 25, apparently.
You got to be under 25. Yeah, to get, you know, maybe 30. Maybe 30 will be the cut.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us here at supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get podcasts from. We appreciate you guys, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. I want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffee House and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way with a trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffee House here in Starkville. Or Brupolo over in Tupelo. If you're not in Starkville, if you're not in Tupelo, make it real easy on yourself. Go to strangebrewcoffeehouse.com and get it shipped right to your door. Mother's Day is coming up. If mom's a coffee drinker, a gift from Strange Brew Coffee House would be the way to go. The Mississippi Beef Council wants to remind you that
beef,
it is what's for dinner. If you're cooking out this weekend, nothing beats the sizzle of beef for the grill. But if you're not, if never mind the weekend, you know, it's a Thursday night. You got to go do a weeknight meal. You got to get dinner on the table. Beef is such a great ingredient to use on a weeknight meal. It cooks quickly, it's delicious, and it can go in almost any recipe, no matter what you want to cook. Do you want to cook Mexican? You want to cook Chinese? You want to cook Italian? Do you want to make burgers? Beef can be the star of the show. If you're looking for recipes, they're at msbeef.org. Beef, it's what's for dinner. Thanks to our friends at the Mississippi Beef Council. College Corner, collegecornerstore.com. That's the place to find the maroon and white merchandise that you're looking for. Everything Mississippi State available right there at College Corner. Two locations in the Jackson area. Original by Fleet Feet, full by the half shell, or you can shop online at collegecornerstore.com. Priority One Bank, 16 locations here to serve you throughout Central Mississippi. Let PriorityOneBank.com be your guide and show you not only how they're going to help you invest and manage your money, but how they're going to help you prepare for the future. Now more than ever, when you have questions about your money, you need answers. You want to talk to a banker that knows you by name, not just by your account number. That's what you get at Priority One Bank. If you live in Central Mississippi, you live near a Priority One Bank location. A Priority One Bank, make you their priority. Speaking of Central Mississippi, Carlo Barone was in Central Mississippi last night for the Governor's Cup. Mississippi State, a clean sweep of the Ole Miss Rebels. 4 games, 4 wins, 7-3 is the final score. Bulldogs kind of kept the same vibes from the Sunday LSU game going in that it wasn't all about the long ball. They were able to drive in runs. They got out to a 4-0 lead and then never trailed. Ole Miss kind of got back into the game there with a three spot. Judd Uitermark, I think he may never want to see Mississippi State ever again.
Yeah, man.
Has now left the bases loaded 4 different times against Mississippi State, twice last night. Let's talk about this game from two perspectives. First off, for Mississippi State, this counts as a conference win as far as RPI goes. You know, when you look at State's record at the end of the year, if they're 17-13, they're actually 18-13. If they're 18-12, they're actually 19-12. From an RPI perspective, last night, State jumps ahead of Ole Miss. They're now 12th in the RPI. Ole Miss is down to 14th. The Starkville Regional looks like, assuming State doesn't just have a brain fart these last couple of weeks, that's going to be a sure thing. It's going to be about, is there a Starkville Super Regional right now? When you look at the teams that are ahead of Mississippi State, Southern Miss is ninth, but they are not likely to they're not going to be a top eight seed, no. I would think. I don't think Oregon State is going to be a top eight seed. So there's a couple they're 8-9 right now. I don't think Alabama, who's currently 6 in the RPI, they may not even host, but they will certainly not be a top eight seed. So State at 12 has an opportunity if they take care of their business, if they can find a way to win. Winning 4 games would probably be enough, right? That's 17-13. You're certainly going to host. You have a chance to be the eight seed there. Winning one more game, and that means either winning one of the two road series or winning
sweeping Auburn,
would almost, at 18-12, I would feel very confident that State is one of the top eight seeds. You were in Pearl last night for this game. Did you like what you saw from the Bulldogs?
Yeah, it didn't really feel like Ole Miss was much in the game at all. I mean, they got that three spot in, I believe, the sixth inning. But after that, I mean, Judd Unimark leaving the bases loaded twice didn't really help. And I mean, they were at one point, I guess, with when they had it loaded and you have one of your best hitters up. I guess at that point they were in the game, but State just kept finding a way to put them away. And I feel like that was similar to what we saw at LSU. You know, the team got themselves in close situations. You got to think Saturday. I mean, they're only up one in the ninth, still able to close it out. I mean, they're down pretty much all day Sunday, and then they find a way to, dominate them in the last three innings to win. So it was very similar formula, but like you said, nobody hit a home run. Neither team did. Teal got really close. Colin Reuter got really close, but nobody was able to put it out of the ballpark. And when you can win games, last night or Tuesday's win felt more like the team that we had watched before the Georgia and Tennessee series, manufacturing runs, singles, doubles. I mean, we got to talk about Kevin Malewski. I mean, didn't hit a home run.
He had a single.
He had three hits.
Yeah.
He hit a single,
That's
a double, and
a
another
huge
thing.
problem for State's opponents. If he's starting to figure it out a little bit, and
Because
look,
he's home run or bust.
I don't expect him to hit 350,
No.
but can he get his batting average up to like 240? That's going to be a huge plus for Mississippi State.
Brian, he won player of the game.
Yeah, as he should have. He had
I
three
mean,
hits and what, three RBI?
yeah. So, yeah, he drove in two. Three RBIs. I mean, the fact that you're getting a guy that had, what, 14 hits in the year and eight of them be home runs, and then he drops a three game or three hit game. I mean, that was spectacular. But they didn't really let Ole Miss in that game. The bullpen was really good, and Ole Miss's offense has been very good over the last month. April, they have been smashing home runs.
They kind of fell back into old habits Sunday
Yeah, a
against
little
Georgia. They were
bit.
good offensively
And then it
on Saturday.
bled into Tuesday a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, granted, two of their best hitters were hurt. Federico got a hit to right, but limped. And I mean limped to first. Farley didn't even play, but I don't want to discredit State at all. I mean, they dominated that game from start to finish. You put up four in the first, one in the second, or three in the first, one in the second.
Four in the first, one in the second.
All right, okay, yeah. You go up 5-0 and kind of control the game the entire way. It was never a doubt after that second inning that I didn't think that they were going to win the game.
That's the one ish. That's the one side of this is talking about the game itself. Here's the other side, and Brian O'Connor talked about it after the game. Those of us who watched the game at home saw the lack
And
of quality
the live stream.
of the live stream. We saw Will Furniss nearly break his arm trying to slide
Yeah,
because of the turf.
that was scary.
I know you're new to this series, right? But the quality of this facility, which, when the Braves were there, this was a high double A baseball facility. It was maintained to a certain standard. Now you have an independent league team, and nothing against the Mud Monsters. I'm sure they're trying to do the best they can. This stadium is not cut out to host these two teams anymore. The playing surface, this is the second time in what, 2 or 3 years that they've been a problem. Remember the Ole Miss Southern Miss game got canceled there a few years, or had to be ended because the turf was coming up from the ground. The crowds have always been a problem in terms of, concessions. I have been to these games, and sometimes you'll stand in line for 20, 30 minutes just trying to get a Coke, just trying to get I think a popcorn. I just and O'Connor said it after the game. He's like, "Why are we playing this?"
Yeah, he did. He was not happy, but I feel like it was more not the trip to Pearl. He didn't understand why they were playing another SEC game that doesn't really count for the record, the conference record. It does for RPI.
Right.
He was like, "Why do we play this game? Because no other SEC team is just putting themselves through it." And I
And
understand.
that's
I
not
mean,
true. Well, it's not true in some ways in that Clemson and South Carolina play each other, right? But it's not an SEC team.
yeah.
But they play a three-game series. They play it's home neutral.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech played each other a couple weeks ago
Yeah.
at Truist Park. But again, that's
I think he was
not conference.
more saying it because it's this late in the year and you're going through the gauntlet. I mean, what are they, seven series in now? And then you've got to turn around in one day and then play another SEC team, which I understand the frustration because you would rather much rather have a team, no disrespect, but a Grambling or a Nicholls State come up on the schedule where you can, get some guys in that aren't playing and maybe make them a little bit happier. But then you go turn it right around and you got to play a team that was a week ago like really, really good in the SEC standings.
I would go another way with what you're describing, though, in that, and this is, State's RPI is currently 12. They played Alcorn State recently in this season. Where is Alcorn? They're currently 305.
Yeah.
They're only 308. They're only 308 teams.
Oh,
They're
wow.
third from the bottom, fourth from the bottom. They're 4-35 on the season. There's no point in playing them when you could easily schedule a home game or even a road game. State could go to UAB. That would be a much better situation for their RPI. I would be willing to bet that they'd be up a spot in the RPI if they just played a game at,
I see what you're saying now.
and you say, because when, so when you say play, another Grambling, instead of doing that, pick
I
somebody
just need.
who's like between 75 and 150 and play them.
I was more just saying like a non-conference team that's not SEC school.
Play ULM, play Old Dominion. Play Jacksonville, play VCU. Those games are probably a little tougher for midweek games. Like getting a Virginia team down here for a midweek game might be a little tough, but there are better options than that. I get what you're saying, but from an RPI perspective, State doesn't really do itself any favors playing the number of SWAC teams they do. Playing Jackson State doesn't really hurt you. Jackson State
Well,
currently.
I feel like they like to play the in-state foes
They do.
anyway,
I mean, even
for the
Jackson State is, they're
state.
not having a great year, but some
No.
years they are. But they play Jackson State. They're 294. As I already mentioned, Alcorn is
305.
305, and Grambling is 293.
Oh,
So, I
jeez.
mean, that's three games that did you, they hurt you to win
Yeah.
those games. Got to figure that out for next season. But as far as the Governor's Cup goes, it really feels like it's kind of had its time. And I understand the tradition of it. I used to go to it back in the day when it was at Smith-Wills, when it was still the Mayor's Trophy. I've been to a number of Governor's Cups. Anytime Mississippi State and Ole Miss get to play each other, it's a good experience. You have fun. It's great for the winner to be able to take the trophy home. But if you can't give the two teams the level of broadcast, the level of facility that they are accustomed to when they go on the road to other places, when they go on the road in the SEC, this is an SEC game. It should have SEC standards in terms of the broadcast. And look, I don't know how you do it. Like, do you just tell the Mud Monsters, hey, if you want to host this game next year, you've got to allow SEC Network to come in, wire up your stadium, and the commentators are going to be, next year Ole Miss will be the home team. Commentators are going to be the Ole Miss guys. Do you do that? Or I don't know. Or do you just find a way to cancel the game? Do you move the game? Does it move down to the coast? Could you do the Governor's Cup the week of that State's always on the coast, right? Could you do it that week? I don't know the answer because Ole Miss, the way they do it is they like to travel that week as well. I don't know the answer to these questions. I just know that there's a problem and it needs to be solved sooner rather than later.
I saw people on Twitter talking about how they should just move the series to wherever the other place that's hosting the three
Right.
games
It would have been
here.
in Starkville this
So it
year.
would have been in Starkville this year, and then just vice versa. Honestly, I feel like that's the best solution. It does kind of suck for the Mud Monsters and, the Pearl as a whole
Well,
kind of hosting it down there.
it just is what it is at this point,
But
though. You can't have players.
quality versus,
You can't risk player safety because your facilities aren't up to
Yeah,
standards.
I
You
mean that
can't.
dive that Will Furniss took looked
You look at
tough.
Mississippi State. Every game they've played in this year has had a quality broadcast, right? Even the Flow Sports broadcast. Make fun of them if you want. You could see the field. The camera angles were good. Maybe the commentators weren't the best in the world, but the broadcast itself was fine, right? And then you play every other game in an SEC park, and you get the SEC Network cameras and everything else. There's no reason for this one game, and Ole Miss is the same way, right? Every game Ole Miss has been the same exact situation. There's no reason for these two teams to have this one game where their fans are having to suffer. It's also, think about it, like a ticket to these games is like $70 to sit in the outfield, like. Nobody's winning as a
No.
result of this. So I don't know if this is the last Governor's Cup we'll ever see, but it's going to be a topic. I think O'Connor's going to push the topic this coming this offseason when they talk about trying to put the schedule together. But all in all, a really good win for Mississippi State. All right, let's get some more baseball talk in. Brooks Brine's able to join us today. We had him on the show earlier. Couldn't get him on Tuesday. He had some work-related things, but wanted to pop in. Wanted to get his thoughts not only on the weekend that just passed, but what's to ahead for Mississippi State. Plus, he gave us some really interesting insight on a couple of players, Jack Bauer and Jacob Parker in particular. So let's join. We're joined now by former Diamond Dog, Brooks Bryant. We've got Brooks Bryant on with us today. Wanted to get his thoughts, not only to look back just a little bit to the weekend, but to talk about what the final stretch this team's about to go through in the regular season. Three really huge series for the men. Brooks, let's just look back, though, real quick at this past weekend. You know how special it is to be able to beat LSU. Not a program in Mississippi State, you know, they've gone back and forth with over the past few decades. First sweep since 1985, which is just an incredible. I didn't realize it had been that long, but I guess when you think about it and what that program has been, what were your takeaways from the weekend that we saw with this, with Mississippi State getting all three games from LSU?
Yeah, I think we start with, I heard your interview with Oak, and the first question was basically if we would have seen the stats of the starting three pitchers and said, okay, well, how do you think it went? It would have probably been a sweep the other way.
Yeah.
You know, that was probably Tico's only game that he's struggled. And you know, every pitcher's going to go through that.
He was due.
Yeah. And Elliott did the same thing for Ole Miss, this past weekend. He struggled. So everybody's going to have one or two bad games a year. And hopefully that was Tico's only one, hopefully. But I think it showed that the bullpen continues to be counted on and keeps getting better. You know, Jack Bauer just absolutely dominated whenever he was in there and went 60 pitches, which I think that may have been the first time he's gone over 40.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So he did just an awesome job. And then for, you know, I mean, I'm sure I would leave out a pitcher's name, but, you know, you got Maddox Webb that threw all 3 days. You had Ben Davis that threw 2 days. And the list kind of goes on and on as far as the pitching. But then, you know, with the hitting, there was a couple of games. I know one of them, I think we struck out 13 times. But I believe the other two, it was like 9 and maybe 4 or 5. So I think we cut down on the strikeouts a good bit. And we strung together hits. You know, LSU jumped out 3-0 all three games, first inning. We answered. And then they would answer and jump right back up.
Yeah.
And then we would answer again. So that was something good for me to see was – you know, even when we answered, we may have not gotten the game. I think we got the game under control, but then LSU would answer right back. But then we would throw another punch. So that was good to see that we just kept answering and would finally get the lead at the end. And then, you know, just to see the guys string together some hits. You know, we had, I think, several home runs in the first two games is how we got most of our runs. But the third game, we got it by just taking advantage of walks. And then stringing together hits, and that's something we haven't been doing over the last 3 or 4 weeks.
I wanted to ask you about Bauer. I'm sure you've seen the clip of that slider that he threw that made some. As a hitter, what do you do there, other than strike out? I guess
exactly what the hitter did.
Yeah,
I mean he throws it at your back hip, and then it breaks, you know, into the strike zone, and it just locks you up. That's all you can say is that. It had so much bite and curve on it that it just locks the hitter up to where he's like, he can't do anything. And, you know, when you can do that and throw it for a strike, and then you can also throw one on 0-2 or 1-2 that starts middle of the plate, but it breaks about a foot off the outer edge, that the hitter is pretty much done unless Jack makes a mistake.
Brooks, I want to ask, looking at the series as a whole, obviously the comebacks in all three games, but how big do you think that game one win was just for, you know, the trajectory of the rest of the series?
Huge. Everybody knows Tico is our guy right now. And when you can show that the pitch, your guy does not have his best game, and then the offense can answer, and then LSU answers again, and then you can answer again. I think that set the tone for the whole series. I kept saying if we could ever start one of the three games ahead and get ahead 3 or 4 like LSU did us, I think LSU was primed to basically have us put our foot on their throat and they would die.
Mm-hmm.
But we never could do that until that third game when we finally got up in about the seventh inning and we were able to build off of it. But yeah, going back, Carlo, to your question, I think that first game set the tone for the whole weekend.
So now Mississippi State, final 3 weekends of the regular season. They're playing three top 10 RPI teams, Texas on the road, Auburn at home, and then, of course, Texas A&M on the road to finish it up. Good win last night for Mississippi State, claiming the Governor's Cup in front of a neutral crowd. They've bumped ahead of Ole Miss into in the RPI rankings now. So, the idea of the Starkville Regional is almost certainly, state takes care of their business, it's going to happen. It's just, is it going to be a Starkville Super Regional if things go the right way? This is the part of the year where, if you're whatever your team is, that's what they are. There is no they could get better, they could improve here. I don't think outside of McPherson coming back, which obviously would improve this team. So in your opinion, Brooks, what is this baseball team?
I think they're just a really, really good college baseball team. I've read on the board some people are starting to talk back that we're playing elite again. I don't see that just because I think there's still some concerns on the team in certain areas. And I don't think that we are elite in any facet of the game. I just think we're really, really good in a lot of different areas. And I think I would rather be that way, where we're really, really good in a lot of places, rather than being elite in one certain thing, like say starting pitching, and then we're averaging everything else. I just think being really good in everything makes you a better team, because then you don't have to rely so much, like just for instance, on starting pitching.
What would you like to see out of this team in these three next series? Obviously, Brian talked about how difficult they'll be, but what would you like to see as a result to feel comfortable about not only hosting a regional, but more just heading into postseason play?
Yeah, so with nine ACC games left, and I've kind of posted this on a couple of boards, but I think if you go 4-5, you're for sure hosting a regional at 17-13.
No doubt.
You're probably in that 8-12 range seeding. You may be a super host, that 8 seed. I think if you go 5-4, you're 18-12. You're probably a 6-7, maybe 8 national seed type deal. There you go.
I got him. Put it on the cringe chart for today. I got him.
I see it. But even if you go 4-5, you're 16-14. I'm sorry, if you go 3-6, you're 16-14. And I think you're probably 50-50 on hosting. But to kind of get a little more micro than just the records, I want to see us continue to put the ball in play hard, barrel things up. We started doing that last night. We had 7 runs on. We didn't have any home runs. And I think we had 12 hits, maybe. Not very many strikeouts. So that's what I'm focused on. And last weekend, you had Garrett Fry, Ace Reese, and Noah Sullivan, 1, 2, 3. They hit somewhere around 400, all three of them combined, I believe, for the weekend. So that's what you need. In the 2 weekends we really struggled, those guys struggled at the top of the order. Even though we've got a long, an extended lineup where guys can hit throughout the lineup. If you've got 1, 2, and 3, hitting 200 combined for the weekend, you're going to struggle unless you just happen to have really elite pitching for that weekend. So, I want to keep seeing our hitters continue to barrel balls up, and I think our pitching will continue to be good.
I want to talk about Jacob Parker for just a minute. I know you follow Mississippi baseball very closely, so you would be very familiar with him. The thing I keep coming back to, by the way, with Parker is that he's got a twin brother that's already in the minor leagues that was picked 9th overall in the draft. He was supposedly the better guy, but this kid, Brooks, this is a kid that, I mean, as well as he's playing right now, I think you and I, it's not a stretch to project him as one of the top players in college baseball over the next 2 seasons. When you see Jacob Parker, if you want to do a player comp from a former Diamond Dog or even a former just a major leaguer, what do you see?
Man, I see a guy that, to me, he's recognizing pitches already as a true freshman. That's kind of uncanny. He lays off a lot of bad pitches that are out of the zone. He has a little swing and miss, but I mean, his recognition of pitches to me sets him apart a lot of other freshmen right now. that he swings at strikes. He may swing and miss some, but he swings at mostly strikes. And man, he's got some pop in the bat. It sounds different when it comes off his bat. I kind of compare him to, I know I told a bunch of my buddies back 5 or 6 years ago when we had Westberg
Foskey and those guys.
Ben Foskey,
Yeah.
Westberg and Foskey, when they were freshmen, the man, the bat, the ball just come off the bat. It sounded totally different. Like you didn't have to be watching batting practice and you could just hear it and you knew that one of those two guys was taking BP. So that would be, I know both of those guys batted right-handed, but I would still say those would be my two comps, would be like a Westberg or Foskey as far as just early on the way it comes off the bat. And then as far as his pitch recognition, this early in his career, I don't know if I've got one really, but he just swings at a lot of strikes.
When you say pitch recognition, what exactly does that mean? Like as soon as it's out of the hand, he has an idea of is it fastball, curveball, whatever?
Yeah, just like he doesn't swing at many sliders, like down and in up from a righty. The out pitch for a righty against a lefty batter is either most of the time a slider down and in. That's kind of a, it's called a back foot slider, but basically kind of a down and in slider or a fastball away that's up and away. And he just doesn't give in to that that very much. He just doesn't swing at that pitch. I know he swung at one, I believe, last night that was down and in, but he just doesn't swing it that much. But then against a lefty, the grand slam he hit, I mean, it was a 2-0 slider that he said that he was looking fastball, but his barrel stayed through the zone so long that he was able to make just really good contact on a slider because his bat stays through the zone so long and in that same plane as the ball. So being able to recognize it coming out of his hands, as you said, Brian, and not swinging at bad pitches is, you know, and I'm not getting on Woodson right here, but Woodson is a guy right now that's having trouble seeing that slider out of a right-handed pitcher's hand, and he swings at a lot of pitches that are not very competitive. Like they're down in the dirt or they're over in the left-handed batter's box, and so he's not seeing the pitches really well right now. And hopefully he can round into that. But that's kind of what I mean by pitch recognition.
Brooks, I want to ask about kind of the dilemma they have here at first base. You've got two guys that really can play in Reed Stallman and Blake Beavis. And Beavis is on the hot streak and kind of at, you know, the demise of Stallman's playing time, but both have proven to be able to hit the long ball. How do you see maybe that part of the lineup shaken out? Do you think Stallman will take back the first base spot and they're going to move Beavis to the outfield? Or how do you see that lineup going forward?
Yeah, so I think they have two options because Beavis continues to hit the ball well. You can either swap him in and out, left versus right, some, and play Beavis all the time against a lefty, and Stallman pretty much all the time against a righty. But that's going to give probably Stallman more at bats just because you're going to see more righties. Or, and this was back when Teal was struggling, I was saying move Chance to left, move Chance from left to center, and then you can move Beavis to left field. And then you can have Beavis, Chance, and Parker in the outfield, and then also have Stallman in the lineup against righties. But now Teal, the last couple of games, has started to come on. So it's a great problem to have. But I think we'll probably see them kind of platooning at first, continue to do that until maybe one is not hitting as well. And right now, they both, man, anytime either one of them comes up, I feel good about it.
One last thing before we let you go. Did you hear Jay Powell's commentary right prior to the Grand Slam?
I did, and I thought the same. I was thinking the same thing
I
as
was going to
he.
ask, yeah.
As a hitter, I mean, you've seen six straight balls because I think they walked the hitter before him on four
Said
pitches, and
Beavis, yeah.
yeah, and then he threw one slider and one fastball for balls away. And I'm thinking the same thing. I'm thinking, okay, you take a pitch here, and you know, and then it's 2-1, and you still should see a pretty good pitch the next pitch. And I'm kind of like Jay was. I'm glad he wasn't thinking the same thing we were because he definitely, but you know, he thought he was getting a fastball, and I thought he would get a fastball too. But as I said, he was able to keep the barrel through the zone long enough. And man, as soon as he hit it, everybody knew it for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Great stuff, Brooks. As always, really appreciate your time, my friend, and we will talk to you again very soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See you later.
Good stuff from Brooks, as always, and we will get him back on very soon. to give his thoughts. This baseball season has it's almost, Carl, it's almost at the point where, like, after the Tennessee series, I was like, this team has been disappointing. I like this season has not gone the way I thought. Back-to-back sweeps have put them back to into where, okay, they're almost where I thought they'd be. I thought they might have like one or two more wins. If they can find a way to take two this weekend from Texas, who, speaking of, once again, midweek madness struck again last night. You had some losses, and Texas had to walk off Sam Houston last night.
Oh, wow.
They barely won that game. We'll see what happens. So, great weekend coming up. We'll talk more about it on tomorrow's show. Let's move into a little spring football preview that's brought to you by our friends over at Two Brothers Smoke Meats and The Older Brother. Two great places to go grab lunch. Don't forget, Tuesdays are Taco Tuesdays at Two Brothers. Enjoy their extensive menu of barbecue tacos. And then Wednesdays are Wing Wednesdays, so you can get those great smoked wings at a discount. And at Two Brothers, when you're there in the restaurant, you can get them, with some sauce on them. You get buffalo or lemon pepper, or I think they have like a Korean barbecue one. That's some great
The
options.
white barbecue
The white
too.
barbecue. Are you a white barbecue sauce
Oh,
guy?
1000%.
Really?
Oh,
I'm
yeah, it
not.
is
I am not.
beautiful.
I'm not.
No cornbread, no white
But
barbecue.
do you know what the main ingredient in white barbecue sauce is?
Isn't it mayo?
It's mayo. That's the devil's pomade. I don't want
Okay,
that.
not a mayo guy, but I am a white barbecue guy.
So it's like you don't like mayo,
It's
but they
like
add a little vinegar and a little black
vinegar.
pepper to it, and now it's
Yeah,
barbecue sauce.
I've actually made it before myself. I did it in college, and I thought it was great.
It's kind of like, you know how I like eggs?
I don't
I
like
don't
eggs.
like eggs, but you know how I like to eat eggs?
You don't.
You take eggs and you mix them with flour and butter and sugar, and you make
Oh,
a
I see
cake.
what you
I'll eat them
said.
then.
Yeah, that's true.
Same concept here for white. I'm not a big white barbecue.
Eggs suck.
So have you gotten the barbecue chicken bacon sandwich at Two Brothers? You
No.
need to get that. It's chicken, smoked chicken.
Wait, was it with the white barbecue?
Yeah, it's
I
got bacon.
actually I did get that. I was
Okay, with
there
the
today.
chicken and the bacon
It's
and it's
wonderful.
great.
It
Yeah,
was
yeah. I
wonderful.
switched the red barbecue sauce.
Oh, you had me and then you lost me.
That's what I do. You can get what you. That's the thing about Two Brothers. They're like Burger
These
King.
are
Have it your
opinions
way.
we have, yeah.
These are just opinions. Yeah, your food opinions are your food opinions, unless you say you like cornbreads over biscuits, and then you're just wrong.
I mean, I like both. I'm a supporter of
I'm
both.
just saying.
I'm also a RoPat supporter, so I guess
That
I'm
has nothing to do with
the
food.
worst person ever.
You're really worked up about this RoPat thing. You're
I
more worked
don't
up
get
about it
it.
than I am.
I don't get okay.
It's just not. Let me see your hat. Let me see your
I
hat.
don't mind taking it
Give
off.
me your hat.
Why?
Because I want to show you
Are you
something.
gonna put it
You
on?
want to, I want to show you something. Look. All right. There's your hair. All right. I don't know how. I got a bigger head than you, but like, tell me that looks right on me.
Well, you gotta do the back.
Well, okay, fine.
You're the YouTube viewers are getting a show
Oh yeah,
here.
if you're watching on YouTube, yeah,
This might be a good one to watch on YouTube.
that does not look good on
You're
me. It
trying.
looks like I'm in the military. This looks like like a drill sergeant's hat. This does not work for me at
Give
all.
me a salute.
Yeah, so no, that's not how I roll. So we say all that to say we love Two Brothers and the Older Brother. Great products, great service. Every business likes to promise it to you. They deliver it to you at Advantage Business Systems. They've been doing it for over 50 years. If you're looking for business technology, if you've got a new copier, a new printer, new computers or laptops, call Advantage Business Systems today to not only get what you're looking for, but to get what you need down the road, which is service after the sale. They know how to take care of you long, long after that first purchase is made. That's why they have so many repeat customers. That's why they've been in business for over 50 years. 601-362-9192 or visit them online at absms.com. Find out why Advantage Business Systems helps your business do business. Maroon & Co. is the place to go when you're looking for Mississippi State gear here in the city of Starkville or in the Golden Triangle. Nobody has a bigger or better selection than our friends over at Maroon & Co. Everything Mississippi State, they've got it. They're willing to put it out there for you. They've got great stuff, logos that you want. It's all right there at Maroon & Co. And of course, best of all, they have our promo code so you can save some money. Thunder 15, 15% off the regular price. Some exclusions do apply. Before you go to that next Mississippi State game at Diddy Noble Field, make sure you've gone to Maroon & Co. Scruggs Farm, Lawn and Garden in Saltillo, they have what you want for less. That's not just a slogan, guys. That is the literal truth. If you are if you've got to get out in the yard this weekend, if you're working out in the garden this weekend, if you got home repair projects, if you're just wanting to hit the outdoors, get out on the lake, do some fishing, you want to do a little hunting, if you've got to get, what are you laughing at?
Hunting had no G on it.
I'm from Mississippi.
Just
Hunting.
Keep going. Keep
Hunting.
going. Hunting.
Hunting and fishing. What do you want from me? This, you say it.
Hunting.
Okay.
I tried there though.
Hunting.
I said that on purpose. I'm not gonna
We're going hunting later.
lie.
We're
Stop.
hunting for foxes.
Or doves, apparently.
Yeah, dove. Dove. I don't know if this is dove season or not, but I think dove season is in November.
Okay.
I don't know what season it is right now. But whatever it is you're trying to do, Scruggs, I'll say the G on Scruggs. Scruggs Farm Lawn and Garden. They've got a tool, they've got a device, they've got something that makes your life a little easier. Go visit them this weekend. Scruggs Farm Lawn and Garden, Saltillo. They have what you want for less. Good Hope Land and Timber, or is it Ood Hope? Ood Hope Land and Timber. Good Hope Land and Timber. If you're a landowner in the state of Mississippi, that's the name to know. That's the name to trust. If you're trying to buy or sell land, they'll make that happen for you. No problem. No questions asked. Give them a call today, and whatever size plot of land you're trying to buy, whatever you want to build on that land, they can help you with that. But if you're already a landowner, that's where Good Hope Land and Timber can really, truly help you out. They help you manage all of your resources sustainably.
Ooh.
Sustainably. That was a bad
You
one.
spell Mississippi, guys.
Oh, you son of a. Shut up. You use both spells
Damn.
against me? How dare you? But not only, sustainably and profitably. So if you're looking to buy, sell, or just manage your own land, call Good Hope Land and Timber. 601-442-9888 or visit them online, g-hope.com. Good Hope Land and Timber, locally trusted, landowner approved. November 5th, 2022, in a pouring rainstorm. I actually went to this game as a fan, not as a member of the media. Mississippi State defeated Auburn 39-33 in overtime, a game that State dominated the early portions of. Auburn came back, made it a very exciting game, but State was able to find their way. That was the game where right after Brian Harsin had been fired at Auburn. So Cadillac Williams, that was his first game as interim head coach. Knew going into it, Carlos, like, new head coach bump. It's going to be Auburn was not good that year. State should have dominated. They didn't. Why is that game significant? Because that is the last time Mississippi State won a SEC home game. So their next SEC game, they lost to Georgia at home. Then they went to Ole Miss. They won that game. 2023 did not win an SEC home game. Lost to LSU, lost to Alabama, lost to Kentucky, lost to Ole Miss. 2024, they didn't win any SEC games, let alone the home games. And then last year, same thing. The one SEC game they won was on the road. They lost to Tennessee, they lost to Texas, they lost to Georgia, they lost to Ole Miss. So how many days has that been since
A
November?
lot.
Yeah,
So
well,
their last.
let's get the exact number here. Since November 5th, is that right? November 5th,
Of 2022?
2022, it has been 1,271 days.
I was a sophomore in college. I've been graduated for almost 2 years now.
There you go.
That is crazy.
And so, obviously we have a ways to go before we get to September 26th of 2026, when Mississippi State will host Missouri. That is State's next chance to break this streak. So this game, you would think Mississippi State, Missouri, okay, you obviously want to win it. It's a conference game. You'd like to be able to beat them. They're a good team. They beat you up. They embarrassed you a little bit last year, the way they were able to run the football. You'd like to get a little revenge on that. That's fine. If you don't win this game, if you can't beat Missouri, and you look at State's, SEC home schedule, the next week they're playing Alabama at home. That's going to be a tough one. We'll just be honest about it. All right. Then they don't have another home game until October 24th. That's against Oklahoma. Now we've got an Oklahoma preview. We're not going to put it on the show, but we will have it on the podcast feed with Soonerscoop.com's Eddie Radosovich. Talked to him earlier this week, so that's on the podcast feed just below this one. But that's going to be a tough game. They were in the college football playoff last year. Then you've got Vanderbilt. Now, I think Vandy has to regress a little bit now that Pavia is gone.
I
They're probably
agree.
going to be starting a true freshman quarterback. But at that point, we're talking 4 full calendar years since you've beaten an SEC team at home. That game is on November 5th. It would be a 4 years plus 2 days. This is a really big game for Mississippi State. And you talk about putting some credit in the bank if you're Jeff Lebby. If Lebby can be 3-1 after the first four, I think everybody's on board with Jeff Lebby. Now, does that mean he loses at Minnesota? That could be the case. Loses at South Carolina? Could be the case. Loses to Missouri could be the case, but I would say that if he loses to Missouri, people are going to be mad because it's just been, it's becoming a thing. Yeah, you know, we just talked about breaking this 30-year streak of the
Yep.
wide receivers, right? Here's the new one for Mississippi State. They have to find a way to win an SEC home game, and Missouri's going to be their first shot at it. We'll talk a little bit more about the Tigers in just a moment. Let's go now to an interview. I talked earlier this week to Callum McAndrew, covers the Tigers for the Columbia Tribune. Been on the Pro podcast with us a number of times. Great reporter. Let's go down to that interview. Of course, all of our interviews here on the show brought to you by our friends over at Alora Modern Wellness. If Mississippi State goes 4 years without winning a conference game at home, I might need some recovery. I might need somebody to just be like, you know what, Brian, we're going to do whatever we got to do to get you to feel a little bit better. And that's what Alora Modern Wellness does for you. If it's pain, if it's stress, if it's just, you know, you're tired, your body doesn't feel right, Alora Modern Wellness has a service in place that you can check out and make yourself feel a lot better. Give them a call today at 662-268-9255, or you can visit them online at aloramodernwellness.com. You can book all of your services right there. They go, Alora Modern Wellness will provide this interview with Callum McAndrew of the Columbia Tribune. All right, we're back on track with our spring football series. We're joined now by Callum McAndrew from the Columbia Tribune, covers the Missouri Tigers. We've had him on a few times before. Callum, always appreciate your time. A year ago, if you were listening to this podcast or if you were listening to Sports Talk Mississippi, I was waxing pretty poetic about Austin Simmons and how he was going to be the next great Ole Miss quarterback and how all that was going to work out. I still believe in that guy. I think he's super, super talented. What is he going to be at Missouri this year?
Yeah, I think it's pretty significant that Missouri's gone ahead and just named him the starter. That is not something that Eli Drinkwitz has done necessarily in the past. I mean, you look at the quarterbacks that they've gone through. Bo Prabula last year, they took him into the first week of the season with Sam Horn to get into that. Brady Cook, in 2 of his 3 years as the starter, had to go into fall camp, also had to go into the first week of the season in 1 of the years that he won the job. This is not something Drinkwitz has done. He has liked to let these things develop into fall camp. He's liked to see a full off season of work from his quarterbacks. But I think it's pretty telling that they've got this guy in from Ole Miss. They had him on a do not contact tag in the transfer portal, essentially on the first day before Ole Miss's playoff run was even done. And they had this guy essentially lined up to come here. I think they've identified him pretty early as someone that they wanted to be here. And I think it seems like they're fairly confident in what he can be. Now, we know what Missouri's offense is. They're run first. It's Ahmad Hardy. It's you know, they've produced three of the SEC's leading rushers in the last 5 seasons, but they have been pretty woeful for the past couple of years at moving the ball downfield. I think Simmons, lefty guy, former pitcher, looks like he's got a bit more of an arm on him than even Brady Cook did a couple of years ago. That was one of his limitations at times. And then Bo Prabula, definitely last year, that was his major limitation. They have identified the passing offense as something that was a weakness, and I think that's where they are going with this step. And I think naming him the starter already was pretty significant.
And then you mentioned Hardy, as good as any
Yeah.
running back in the country was last year. I always thought it was kind of funny that Hardy came to Missouri and Lacy left Missouri, and those are
Yeah.
the two best guys. Like, could have had them both if he had played your cards right. I don't know, but he's great. There's no getting around that. What about this wide receiver core for Missouri? Who does Simmons have to throw to? I know Caden Lee is a familiar name to him.
Yeah. He's the really interesting one to me because it seems like him and Austin Simmons come as a team. Honestly, like that's kind of what this seemed like. He looks like a really good player, man. I'm really intrigued to see what Missouri does with him out the slot because they've had a couple of good slot receivers in the past few years. That has been where they've been pretty consistently great with Luther Burden and then Kevin Coleman last season, you know, a couple of NFL guys now. So I'm intrigued to see what they do with him. That has been their strength. Couple other guys that really intrigue me on the outside. They've got Donovan Olubide, who's a freshman last season, who made some absolute circus catches. He was definitely Missouri's best rookie last year. I think he's going to give them a little bit of a high point threat. I like what he brings to the team. And then Caleb Goody from Cincinnati. He was at one point clocked, I believe, as one of the five fastest players in the sport. By you know one of these companies that tracks those stats. So that's something that I think they can utilize now, if they've got someone who can move the ball downfield. We'll see how they incorporate it. They haven't been the most aggressive passing offense in the past, but they have seemed to have put a bit of intent behind bringing in weapons, giving Austin Simmons something to work with in the passing game. And those are the three primary threats, and they all bring a little bit something a little bit different to the table, which is intriguing. So we'll see what they do with that. We'll see if they can improve in that area, but they've at least got the personnel there to take a step forward on that front.
I think one of the things in this day and age of college football that you can kind of tell how teams are going to be successful is how homegrown are they on the line of scrimmage. I feel like if you're going into the portal for a four or five starters on the O line, four or five starters on the D line, that's a real problem. This Missouri team has that. They have some returning faces on both sides of the line of scrimmage. Is that a big key for you for this upcoming year?
Yeah, I think they've done a little bit of both. They've had years where they've had a lot of consistency. I too tend to worry a little bit about portaled offensive lines, just in terms of consistency and just that how in sync you have to be at that position. I think that is definitely a problem. And Missouri does have that as well a little bit this year. They are turning over a few spots along that offensive line. The one that really worries me there is over at right tackle, since Simmons is a lefty quarterback. They brought in Josh Atkins from Arizona State. He's a guy with 2,500 career snaps, really experienced player, which is something, they did that last year with Keegan Trost, who was a top 100 pick this year. So they've done the portal side pretty well before. But Atkins has picked up an injury, and they don't know if he's going to be ready to go at the start of next year. So now there's a massive question at right tackle. I'll be intrigued to see, because like you said, they do have consistency and they do have some homegrown stuff along the rest of the line. Caden Green's going to be a potentially a first-round draft pick over at left tackle next season. You've got Dominic Judice, who was excellent at guard for Missouri last year. Really, really, he's going to slot over to center. Which I think is even a more natural position for him from what we hear. We'll see what they do. There are some questions there, but I mean they have two really major returning pieces, which I think that is key there.
The place where I see the most new faces on this depth chart is in the secondary. They went
Whoa.
into the portal for some players there. Of course, when you lose guys like Stephen Hall and Jalen Catalan and all those guys, you're going to have to do that. Is that the place in the spring where you had the most you had your eyes on the most?
Yeah, I mean the whole defense really. I mean, you look at, I mean, five of Mizzou's six NFL draft picks were defensive starters. And then you look even further, some of their undrafted free agents, some guys who are just graduating. I mean, they're turning over, I believe, eight or nine of the 11 starters, and then even more rotational pieces. But the secondary, I mean, it's completely turned over almost. I mean, it's all of your three rotational cornerbacks. It is two of the three starters at safety by the end of the season. It is a lot to turn over. Now there are, it's tough to tell. They're not lighting up the playbook in spring camp, so it's tough to see really what these guys are up to a lot of the time. But there are pieces in there that I'm generally encouraged by. I think Chris Graves, another familiar name down in Mississippi, there was a starter for Ole Miss in their playoff run. Looks to be a really good player and somebody that we're hearing a lot of good things about. They've got a safety who kind of overtook Jalen Catalan in the backfield last season, which I thought was impressive. He's a big guy, 6'3", 220 pounds. Got some really good safety size, hard hitter. He's going to kind of anchor that position, but then there's just a lot of turnover there. Just in general, it is going to be two new corners that are starting. It is going to be a couple of new safeties. They have that sort of star hybrid nickel linebacker position safety there, where we still don't really know. I asked this guy Santana Banner of who they were trying out there, and he said we're all kind of taking some reps there. We're all testing it out and seeing what happens, who can fit in there. So there are questions there. I think they've earned a little bit of the benefit of the doubt there, because they have had two really good defenses in a row under Corey Batoon. So I think we can give them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. But the turnover is, it's a lot. It really is significant.
Missouri has been this team that's been on the periphery of the playoffs the past couple of years, but they have not been able to break through yet. Do you feel like, just looking at this team as it is right now in the spring, that this could be the year where Mizzou finds their way into that 12-team playoff?
You know, you look, I think the easy answer to that is I am less confident about that this year than I would have been at this time last year. I think there is a little bit more turnover, and I think there's a little bit more turnover at key positions. I think when you look at where they were last year, particularly at really impactful positions on the defense, at the second level and an edge rusher, I think they were deeper and more talented at this time last year. So I have some questions about that. But like you say, you know, they have consistently now put up seasons where they were at least in that conversation heading into November. They were at least in the realm in the world where you could say, hey, we need to at least think about Missouri in these discussions. We'll see if this is the year. There is a lot of turnover, and they do have, I mean, they've got what I think, who I think is the best running back in the sport. I mean, I you know, I'll hear arguments for Kawan Lacey and you know, Hardy is just, I mean, it makes you laugh
I mean, if
what he does in
you're on a
some games.
Mississippi State podcast, they know what Ahmad Hardy can do in a college football game.
Yeah, oh, that's yeah. You're no kidding. Yeah, I mean, it just ludicrous. You know, they do have really, really intriguing pieces on offense, and I think they are. You know, you're talking about year seven of the Eli Drinkwitz era as well. There is familiarity there. They know what they're doing. There is some consistency just in staff, in concept. We'll see. I think the schedule is quite tough for them this year. They're going to have to knock off a Georgia or a Texas. They're going to have to go and upset someone if they want to be in that playoff discussion this year. To me, there are holes and there are questions that need answering. And, you know, you even look at down at the quarterback position, Austin Simmons has all the talent in the world. He's taken less college snaps than Missouri's backup freshman, Matt Zollers, who came in for a few games last season. I think he started against Mississippi State. Yeah. He only played three or four games for Missouri, and he's taken more snaps than Simmons in college. So there are questions that they need to prove. They have the talent. There is talent on this roster, and if we get to November again and we're talking about Missouri as a potential fringe playoff team, I won't be surprised. But I'm not sure they can overcome the questions that still exist here in April.
So that is the last question. I've asked everybody the same final question. When we get to that final game of the year, Missouri, who's Missouri finished with this year? I don't know off the top of my head. It's not Arkansas, is it? Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Okay.
Yep.
What are we saying about the Tigers the next day?
Wow. I think that's a tough one. I think we're looking at another good Eli Drinkwitz team. I think we're looking at another team that has put itself into the upper echelon of the SEC, and I think they have familiarity enough that that's where they reside now. I think we can look at this as, hey, 8 wins is the expectation for this Missouri team. And I think that's where we'll see them again this year. The schedule is tough. A lot of the teams that you would normally look at and go, oh, okay, well, that's where there are some more questions there. I'm talking about, you know, your Kentuckys of the world with coaching changes. So there's a little bit of uncertainty there. I still think this is an 8-win team. In my mind, if they go higher than that, it wouldn't shock me. I think that requires some pieces to fall into the right place, though, like it along the defensive line, along the offensive line, and at quarterback.
Mississippi State will host Missouri week 4 of the college football season. That will be a massive game for the Bulldogs. We're going to talk more about that on the podcast as well and why that game in particular is so important. Callum McAndrew, Columbia Tribune, appreciate your time, man, as always.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So Missouri has been this team the past like 3, 4 years. They've been on the periphery, right? They've been close to the playoff. They just couldn't quite break through. I think this is going to be a really good team. But I think a lot of that is I'm still holding on to my Austin Simmons stock from last year. I've never sold. I didn't go through the short on the Austin Simmons stock. I've held on to it. I'm hopeful for a rebound. I think he's a really good, talented quarterback. I think Drinkwitz runs a system that benefits quarterbacks. It helps that you have maybe the best running back in college football standing there alongside you. I think that the Missouri Tigers are going to be pretty good. This is going to be a very tough game for Mississippi State.
I think so too, but I also think it's a winnable game because Simmons will be a month into his first season there, And don't forget, they also got Caden Lee out of the portal, so they have Simmons' favorite target from Ole Miss. But I watched him when I was covering Ole Miss last year, and we always just felt like there was a time where he was going to break out, and he just did not play well. To be honest with you, Brian, if he had stayed healthy the whole year, I don't think that team would have sniffed the playoffs. And that's no shot at Simmons. He just has, he just throws arrogant throws sometimes. He'll give you opportunities for turnovers.
Arrogant throws is an interesting way, but I see what you're saying.
It just,
He just believes in his arm.
yeah. I mean, he's got a very talented arm. He throws a very, very fast. I mean, former pitcher
Yeah.
throws a very fast ball, and it's accurate. But sometimes the decision making is questionable, and we saw that at Kentucky when he got hurt. I believe he had two interceptions in the first quarter. The Wildcats take the lead, and then kind of Ole Miss slowly came back. But Ole Miss was a much better team than Kentucky last year. That game shouldn't have even been close in the first place.
Right, you're correct.
So if he can clean up the decision making, I think he has the potential to be a very good quarterback for Missouri this year. And it's also going to help that he's got a guy like Ahmad Hardy. Not that Kywan Lacy at the time when he was playing with them was great, because we didn't really know. But Ahmad Hardy now is bona fide. I
Those are the
mean,
two best running backs in the conference,
yeah.
Lacy and Hardy. You, one, two, however you want to rank them. I won't argue against you. If you say Lacy, I won't argue. If you say Hardy, I
I mean,
won't.
I cover Ole Miss. I still think it would be Hardy, because I mean, he's insane, but I don't think it's very big of a gap. But when you're playing with a running back like that, that's had a year like he's had, he's going to have opportunities in the passing game. It's just whether he can, clean up the throws and clean up the decision making.
My biggest thought on this game is twofold. One, I still can't ever I the thing that from last season that still sticks in my memory is Lebby after this game talking about how Missouri was giving them the quarterback run with Chapin in there, and earmuff it, kids, but no shit. Like I'm not surprised that Missouri was allowing Blake Chapin to run the football, coach. That's why you've got to make an adjustment and take that away or put the running quarterback in
That's what I was going to
and
say.
see how that. So if I'd love to see Missouri give Mississippi State the quarterback run again, because I think Kamario Taylor would punish them for
I
that.
think this game will be so different,
Well,
though.
that's the other side of that is Hutzler's defense in that game was just
It's broken.
abysmal. It
That
was
was
an abomination to
probably
God
the
and man.
worst performance of the year, I'd say.
That was easily the worst one
Yeah.
because it was just straight up the middle every
It
play.
was, I mean, explosive play after explosive play. I
In the
mean,
ground.
yeah,
Like
it
I can
was.
live with, you throw it over the top and you make some big plays, it happens.
Hardy have over 200 yards
Oh,
this
he was
game.
closer to 300.
Yeah, that's what I
Yeah.
thought.
And with Zach Arnett, I just believe, are you going to limit him to like 55 yards? No,
Probably
probably
not.
not. But how different is that game if Hardy just has 110, 125 yards rushing? It's a much different football game. And I think Zach Arnett provides you with that. So this is a winnable game for Mississippi State.
1,000%.
They need to find a way to do that
Yeah.
and end this ridiculous streak that's been going on since 2022. All right. So we got that interview with it. If you just want to hear the interview, I'm sure some of our Missouri fans would call him if he'll retweet it. We'll listen to it. We've got an Oklahoma preview as well. That is an MSU opponent, but we will just put it down here on the feed. Tomorrow on the podcast, we'll preview Mississippi State, Texas in great detail. We'll do another opponent preview, State's first SEC game of the year, South Carolina. That interview is lined up. Plus, we will have a second preview also on the podcast feed. That's for Tennessee, whose State does not play this year, but we will talk to our old friend Ben McKee from Vols 24/7. He's doing really well. I know some of you guys have asked me about him. He was going through cancer treatment. He's in remission right now. That's great to hear. We'll talk about that before we get into him talking about the Tennessee Volunteers. Have a great Thursday, guys. Back with you on Friday. For Carlo Barone and his rope hat, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk, Mississippi.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.